Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, often we criticize Magic Johnson for being a bit of a Captain Obvious, but he's actually got some pretty good advice for Russell Westbrook. That's next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. Always free, never behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to get the show, usually a little bit early, particularly on non-game days. And plus, you get to see the magic happen. And we all like to have a little bit of fun on the channel, which is growing rapidly. It is a great place to become part of the show because you leave comments. We use them on the show. I actually got a couple I might try to weave into today's. So thanks again for all of your support there. Do want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. By the way, if you have an outside jumper, little three-point acumen, perhaps you might be able to play for the Los Angeles Lakers. I might submit an application. All right, Andy. So we'll get to Troy Brown, who played 20 minutes the other night. We did not get a chance to talk about him and what he might mean to the rotation. Russell Westbrook still in the news. Some new trade rumors reported by Shams Charania at The Athletic. But let's start here with Magic Johnson. He goes on with Shannon Sharp on the official Shannon Sharp podcast. And says this about Russell Westbrook. They're talking about Russ. They're talking about all the struggles. Magic says this. First off, take accountability. If you don't play well, admit it. Stop trying to fight the media and the fans and go out and perform. We like to tease Magic on this show, particularly on social media. And, you know, there's some platitudes here and cliche stuff and whatever. There's something to Magic's advice here for Russ.
Yeah, it was interesting. He talked about during that period in 1984 after the finals when the Lakers lost to the Celtics, and Magic in particular had a very bad finals. And despite the fact that Magic had already led the Lakers two championships in 1980 as a rookie and then 1982 in Pat Riley's first season, you know, sports can be very, what have you done for me lately? And Magic was given the nickname Tragic Johnson after that finals. And he really got ripped apart. And he talked about how it didn't bother him. Or let me rephrase. I'm sure it bothered him in the sense that nobody likes hearing it. It didn't bother him in the way of taking umbrage with it because he said, I played badly. And I knew that I played badly. And I own that I played badly. And rather than, you know, go to war with the media and with fans over this, because fans obviously were chiming in on sports radio and in the editorial section, you know, the letters for the sports section, the LA Times and all that stuff. He went out and killed it in 1985. The Lakers end up winning a championship. And that put the whole Tragic Johnson thing to rest permanently. And Magic's point in all this was just the idea of what you are devoting your energy towards in a situation like this and what is actually helpful for you. And he is correct that I don't know if the solutions are that simple for Russ, but in terms of what he's expending his energy towards, I don't think he focuses a lot of it in ways that, if nothing else, make his own life easier.
Well, the part that I want to note first is where you kind of, You alluded to it. It's not an apples to apples thing because the biggest difference with my reaction when I saw this was that Magic could lean on, you know, how old is he? You know, 24, 25, you know,
Magic's 26. Still firmly in his prime. I don't even know if he's that old.
He wasn't old, you know, and he wasn't, and he had the evidence like really recently, like as recently as during that season. It's not like he was terrible all year.
He was 24 years old during that 1984 season.
Okay. And he had a good year. He just had a bad finals. And so Magic could come back and say, I know I am Magic effing Johnson. Like, yeah, bad finals. I got to own it and I got to come back. You know, similar to LeBron, I think eventually, and I'm going to get the timeline wrong, but LeBron eventually owned that Dallas series. Like, yes, I was not good. I need to do better. And like, that one's on me. I think the problem with Russ, and I think the reason Russ gets so defensive beyond his natural Russness is in part because he doesn't have that confidence in himself anymore. He isn't sure that he can go back and be Russell Westbrook. I think that's the kind of the front that he's putting up. And I think that's the presentation he's making. I don't believe that he believes. I think there is some confidence that's shaken. That said, to the extent that he can do better and like the ignoring the other, I completely agree with Magic. And there is this, I think, sort of clinging to like that territory that just doesn't serve him well, including how he spoke to the media after Sunday's game. It could be easy. He's a path of most resistance kind of guy.
Yeah. If you didn't see it, every response to the questions he was asked after that game on Sunday, every single question he answered with, I don't know. I'm not sure. And it's like, okay, there's gotta be some things you're sure about after this game. You were there, dude. Like you were an active participant in this thing. There has to be something you can comment on.
Right.
But what I think is interesting though, Brian, because you had mentioned like the front that Russ is putting up, and this is how also Russ was when he was at his MVP peak in terms of the way he dealt with media too. And I think this speaks, and this is why ultimately I don't think Russ would take Magic's advice. As competitive a guy as Russ is, and this is something I've talked about in a previous show, I think last season, Russ is a insanely competitive guy because you have to be at this level in this job. But more than that, I think Russ is combative. I think Russ is somebody that is fueled by combative relationships. And he is somebody that needs to be me against the world. Uh-huh. Like that is something that he seeks out. He seeks combative situations and relationships. He seeks conflict, particularly with media. Like this is something that he has decided that he wants and that this works for him. And it leads to him often being really dismissive towards media. And I don't particularly care one way or the other. It doesn't really affect my job. So I'm not offended on behalf of the media. I just think he's actually making the things that he cares about, like in terms of the way his family is treated, the way Los Angeles treats him. I think he's actually digging his own hole through the way he allows himself to be seen that
and
way.
And I
don't think he's serving his own cause well.
I would agree with that completely. And I think the thing about what I find fascinating about this whole thing, it not in a good way, not a way that I was hoping for or anything, but just as a study of humans and characters, is I agree with you. He is doing it kind of the way he's always done it over the course of his career. Just don't think, I think what is scary for him is that none of it works right now. It used to be that combativeness would fuel him. He'd have the little, you know, fights in the same way that Kevin Durant picks fights with eggs on Twitter. And then goes out and drops 39, 9, and 7 with 3 blocks or whatever. And is like, you know, double middle fingers to all y'all. Do whatever I want.
How do you like Russ, me now, Mike 80567?
Exactly. You know, and it's weird to the rest of us. But, you know, okay, this is how he does it. And he's still Kevin Durant. And you go do your thing. Russ is still trying. Russ is going back to the well that's always been there for him. And it's not working. And in some ways, it's sad, and I'm empathetic to him because, like, Russ is not a bad human being. No. He's playing basketball at a level that is not anywhere near $47 million worth of value for a team that has high a franchise that always has high expectations in a situation that he hoped would be a storybook thing and has been a total disaster. As on a human level, I am sympathetic and I am empathetic to him. It doesn't change the fact that you can't keep doing the same thing. But I understand why. I understand why he's doing it, because this is how it's always worked. And Russ, as we've said, as we'll go to break here in a second, Russ has thrived. Russ has built his whole thing out of doing it in a very specific way that he is intensely protective of. Doing it the Russell Westbrook way is his fighting with eggs on Twitter. And when that stops working, this is why I've always thought, like, Russ changing, Russ evolving is going to be harder than almost any of these other stars, because as particular as Carmelo Anthony was, right, all this stuff, like, Carmelo wasn't aggressive in the same way about his style, and not to the same degree.
I don't even know if I agree with that.
Well, that's fine. It's my opinion. You don't have to agree with me. But I just think I can't think of anybody other than maybe Kobe who was just as aggressively defensive about doing it his way and only his way, and thriving on that than Russ.
Yeah. The difference is, as great as Russ was at his peak, Kobe was still better, way better.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And even Kobe shifted the way he did things as he got older.
He did.
Kobe adjusted much, much more than Russell Westbrook did. All right. So Sham Sharania has some trade rumors, point out some players that are on the board now that get to some of these Russ problems. So more Russ, some trade rumors, and some Troy Brown coming up next.
Let's talk about LinkedIn, Brian. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% sure, 100% certain that you have the access to the best qualified candidates available, and that's why you need to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the right people for your team fast and for free. It's easy to lay out all the information about your business, the work environment that you look to foster, projects that you do, all that stuff. And from there, add to the job you're looking to fill and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you are hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. Look, 2022, it is coming to a close. You want to finish out this fiscal year strong, and small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find qualified candidates that you want to talk to faster. So post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
So look, Russ is, it's not going well for Russ to this point this season. The Lakers have a tremendous shooting problem. And Russ's stats in that regard from a 3-point range are managing to drag down a team that's shooting like 20% from three. Russ is shooting 8.3% from 3-point range in three games. That's not good.
It's Vaughn Wafer-esque.
Yeah. Even Vaughn thinks that's not that good.
No, actually Vaughn thinks that's great. Vaughn actually thought that was a reason to just fire away, baby.
Well, yeah. Vaughn Wafer, in Vaughn's Wafer mind, not an excuse to shoot. Yeah. That's why Vaughn, but people don't know this. Vaughn Wafer is part of my fantasy basketball team name. I combined the names of my two favorite Lakers of all time, and my team name is Slavon Waferdenko. So that is something that I am very excited about. I've had that team name for a while. And for the record, Andy, Vaughn Wafer was a career 32% 3-point shooter.
Not when he was with the Lakers.
Nobody shoots well with the Ryan? Lakers. What was his 3-point percentage? Was it higher or lower than 8%?
It was higher, but not by much.
It was 11.8%.
You know what he shot from? Vaughn Wafer 11.8%. Vaughn Wafer from the field shot 17% rounding up.
Nope, 16% rounding up.
I loved him so much.
And then he got to Denver and played 21 games. You know what he shot from three in Denver? 6.7%. It wasn't until later in his career that Vaughn really matured. He shot 45% in Houston.
Right.
39% from three-point range.
He was part of that 2009 team that the Lakers played against en route to that championship that had Ron Artest and Yao Ming. And I so badly wanted the Lakers to win despite Vaughn Wafer averaging 40 points on 40 shots.
Just lighting them up.
Oh, yeah. No, I wanted the Lakers to win. I just wanted Vaughn to go crazy. Yeah, well,
like
we
tease Vaughn Wafer, and we like, you know, Vaughn Wafer had a season in the NBA where he averaged 9.7 points a game on 45% shooting, 39% from three, two rebounds and assist, and half a block. Like, that's good. Half a steal per game. Good for him. Like, that's a legit... He had one really legit NBA season, but I digress. So, like, Russ is not shooting well. He's not. None of this is working. And I have said, like, the Lakers have, it's been reported, are waiting 20 games, and people have, you know, 15, 20 games, 25 games to assess the landscape, and people have kind of interpreted that, I think, too much as they're waiting to see if they can make Russ happen. I don't think that's it. I think that what they're trying to do is wait to see what the market develops. And this from Sham Sharania at The Athletic on Monday, that did make me giggle a little bit, that they're waiting 20 to 25 games to assess what their needs are. Andy, we've watched three games. Do you need 17 more to assess what the team's needs are? Let's start there.
No.
I feel like you got a handle on it at this point.
No, thus far, the needs that I felt were lacking heading into the season remain the needs that I believe that they need.
Right. Just to be clear, Andy, you didn't play the game. You know, do you feel confident in assessing their needs three games in?
Okay, look, to be fair to Shams, or I guess to be fair to whoever is giving this information from the Lakers to Shams, if one of the needs are more help at center, or who could be out there, because you and I both thought that Thomas Bryant and Damian Jones could be a thing that so far has not been, whether in the preseason or in the regular season. To be fair, Thomas Bryant is hurt. Maybe there could be, I guess, a little bit of retroactive assessment going on if you want to start getting down to the particulars. So
yeah,
if you want to play the semantics game.
I'm just saying, I feel like I have a pretty decent feel for what the problems are.
Right, but look, they also might be deciding in 20 to 25 games who on this roster would be in the rotation permanently, who wouldn't be. And that might also affect their needs a little bit.
It could. And outside shooting is obvious. No NBA team can shoot 20% the entire season. There will be somewhere this week, maybe even, there'll be a game where they shoot 46% from three and everybody will think it's over. And then they'll go back to what they've been doing, but it'll raise the percentage. It's really hard to shoot 20% from 3-point range at the NBA level for a season. Now, but they're like, can they get to 35 or 36? Not as currently constructed. And that makes you a decent 3-point shooting team. Like, let's start with getting to 25 first. Outside shooting, though, lack of wings and rebounding. Like, those have been major weak points for this team. And so I thought it was interesting that one of the names that Shams mentioned as a potential trade target was Terry Rozier. We all know that the Hornets are interested potentially in a rebuild and a tank. LaMelo Ball is hurt. Miles Bridges, because he very well may be a garbage human being, could be out for the season and a lot longer than that.
Could be out of the league. Could be in prison.
Yes, that's what I mean by and a lot longer than that. So they are a potential target. And Rozier is an interesting name because he is a scorer. He'd be a legit third scorer on this team that they badly need. This team does not score. And he can shoot, but it is a potentially problematic acquisition in other ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's yet another small guard, and even small by Laker small guard standards. And, you know, unlike a few of the guys that they put out there that may be, you know, Russ is not a big guard in terms of height or necessarily length, But Russ is a stocky guy. Like, Russ is strong. Like,
he's a brick. I mean, Russ is built like a brick.
You know, Patrick Beverley is undersized, but he's obviously proven himself capable of guarding up in certain situations. Like, Lonnie Walker is long for his height. You know, like, Austin Reeves is at least bigger for a guard, if undersized for a wing, that sort of thing. Like, you know, you start getting into Terry Rozier, you're getting more into the Kendrick Nunns and Dennis Schroeders of the world for this roster.
He's listed at 6'1", 190. I don't think he's that tall.
Right. And for what it's worth, he is going to be owed about $95, $96 million through 2026. It's a smaller yearly than you're dealing with Russ. It ranges anywhere from 21 to 26 per year, but you know, that is,
and that's not a wild, that's not like a crazy overpay for somebody who
it's
produces.
Not, but it's a long-term commitment, particularly for a team that never seems to like any type of long-term investment for anybody that's not like an all NBA caliber player. That would certainly throw some of that planning, throw a bit of a wrench into that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, he also mentioned, Josh Richardson in San Antonio, but your question first.
So Terry Rozier, functionally because of that contract, serves in a lot of ways as what I think the Lakers would be committing to with Miles Turner. Because if you're going to trade two first-round picks to essentially acquire Miles Turner, you are maybe not ironclad 100%, but you are damn close to that committing to re-signing him this offseason. Because otherwise, if you let him walk for nothing or like some sort of, you know, janky sign and trade,
better win a title,
right?
You better win the whole damn thing.
I mean, because that just can't happen. You can't do that. Would you rather, either way, you're committing to that guy as your third piece going forward in this era. Rozier has been more durable over the course of his career than Miles Turner. And he is 28. So they both kind of fit the timeline of playing with AD, if nothing else. Who would you rather commit to?
It's tough because I would rather commit to Miles Turner as a player, particularly alongside AD. I think they could make a really interesting, formidable front court for several years moving forward, particularly defensively. I think they could be a nightmare to score against. But Turner has a lot of injury concerns that you are pairing to Anthony Davis's injury concerns. Like you mentioned, Terry Rozier is more durable, and he's definitely talented. I also think Terry Rozier, broadly speaking, is easier to find and easier to replicate. And frankly, there's only so far Terry Rozier is going to take you, particularly as LeBron starts getting older. I mean, like, really, truly getting older, depending on how long he's with this team, or if he's not on this team. And obviously, you're at that point projecting roster mates that are completely unknown at this point. But I'm not terribly excited about Anthony Davis, Terry Rozier as my foundation.
It's an interesting question. Another name that popped up is Josh Richardson, currently playing in San Antonio. I want to get your thoughts on that and then sum this up, and then we'll talk a little Troy Brown. That's all next. Okay, so the other name, and what I think is, you know, the Lakers are hoping, whether it's Rozier, whether it's Josh Richardson, that either they'll get a better return for those two picks and presumably Russell Westbrook, if the season goes along, and inevitably more options will present themselves, including potentially going back to the Indiana thing, or that the price will be cheaper, that, you know, you could trade maybe one pick and keep the other in a deal for somebody like Josh Richardson to the Spurs or whatever it might be. What do you think about Richardson? I have never been a big Richardson guy. He sort of reminds me in some ways of like prime Jeff Green. Now, you know, where like you're always just sort of chasing the possibility of what you think he's supposed to be, and the reality isn't bad, but it's just not as good as what you want it to be. Richardson, though, can shoot, and he's a legit wing. Thoughts on Josh Richardson?
Yeah, I mean, he's a little bit undersized than
like five.
He's 6'5", 6'6", but he's really thin. Like, I mean, he's listed anywhere from 190 to 200 at that height. Like, he's not a big guy, but he is defensively oriented. He's, the last couple seasons, has shot really well.
6'5", 200, just to clarify.
Yeah.
And shot 44% from three-point range last year, 41% the year before that. So the last couple seasons, he has really, really improved his three-point game. He's currently shooting 47% in San Antonio.
I mean, if nothing else, even if he is undersized as a wing, he might just overall improve the size that you have in the guards that you are forcing to play up because of the roster limitations. I think he actually is a very easy fit for this team, and I can see the appeal. The price to me is what's really intriguing about somebody like Josh Richardson, because you mentioned like that comp to Jeff Green, and I think it's an interesting one. But unlike Jeff Green, I think people have basically stopped chasing that with Josh Richardson. I think at this point, Josh Richardson is considered a 3-and-D role player. So what is the price for that? And how do you actually make that happen in the sense that their salaries don't line up? Are you looking to create some type of exception? Is there somebody else that you're taking with Richardson? How much do you have to take back? You know, that wasn't specified by Shams. You know, guys like Doug McDermott have been mentioned before. Jakob Poeltl has been mentioned
before. Oh, God, if they could get Jakob Poeltl.
But it would be interesting to see what bringing in Josh Richardson entails. I don't think the upside with Richardson is necessarily all that high. Like you can picture, I think, a more explosive upside with Rozier, or, you know, like I said, the tandem of Davis and Turner might sound more intriguing. Richardson, though, is just very easy to picture how he would fit, what he could do, how he can.
And there's no long-term commitment. He's a free agent after this year.
So the devil is going to be in the details with Richardson, I think, in terms of figuring that thing out.
This, I think, is, look, 25. I made the joke about, like, do you need 25 games to figure out what this team needs? But what we're seeing, and I don't know how the Lakers take advantage of the levels here, because they don't have a lot, they don't have anything else to trade other than Westbrook and these picks. So it can't just be Richardson if Westbrook is involved in the deal. It's got to be some other people. If you throw in Jakob Poeltl, then, you know, San Antonio quite rightly is going to demand a lot more. Jakob Poeltl is a very good player. If it's McDermott, maybe not so much. But like, what I think the Lakers are trying to get by waiting is optionality. It's up to Rob Pelinka to figure out how to use it. The question becomes with somebody like Rozier, is Terry Rozier better than what you could get by waiting? And is the penalty for waiting, which is, we'll call it a lost season or whatever, worth the potential upside of what you could do this summer versus making a deal right now? The Lakers have bad choices in front of them, all of them.
It's really difficult to figure out the free agent landscape, like who may become available. Guys that you're predicting their availability on the market right now could end up traded to a different team and then possibly re-signed somewhere else. Uh-huh. You know, if Kyrie Irving is still on their radar at all, and so far the Nets are not coalescing at all in a way that makes you feel, you know, confident that he's going to want to stick around. But just the mere exercise of trying to predict Kyrie Irving's mood a year from now, much less his mood that would necessitate him taking what he might consider, if nothing else, below market value. That is, my friends, dangerous game to play.
I think you can trying to predict what the free agent market's going to look like is never a good idea, because the names, the names are never the names that are actually available. I continue to believe that the value for the Lakers in going to the offseason with all that cap space is actually to absorb players in a trade, using those picks perhaps as sweetener. And that to me is an avenue where you might be able to get someone.
As far though, Brian, I mean, before we go, and we'll hold off on the Troy Brown discussion until Wednesday's show, because
I know you have a bunch of stuff you want to get.
Yeah, I really do think I liked a lot of what we saw from Troy during that game against Portland on Sunday. And, you know, he is not a panacea. And, you know, Darvin Ham described him pregame as having just unlimited upside, and you know that might be a little bit much
it's a little mana from heaven.
Right. Yeah, you know, I'm not sure it's that great, but there was a lot in there that I liked, and a lot of different ways that I think Troy Brown can help in exactly what is projected and expected from him. But in terms of the whole 20 to 25 games thing that the Lakers could be waiting on, it also may be just the idea of what star becomes disgruntled 20 to 25 games in, and you get a sense may want to move. You know, whether you're talking about Bradley Beal, I think, forget the fact that Portland is off to a 3-0 start. Just Dame Lillard is not, if he ever wants to leave Portland, he is not going to demand a trade to the Lakers. You don't go through all this stuff saying you're going to be a Blazer for life, the greatest Blazer ever, and then demand a trade to the Lakers. Like that's too great of a heel turn. But like
Blazers, by the way, now 4-0. They won on Monday. Yeah.
My mistake.
Or is it 3-0? They're undefeated. They won again on Monday. They beat Denver.
Then that would be 4-0. But like, you know, again, like Beal, DeRozan, if the Bulls have some type of struggles, you know, whatever. That might be part of the calculus as well. And we should never, ever underestimate the star bleepery tendencies of this organization.
So we'll see how this goes. We'll do Troy Brown for Wednesday's show. Get you ready for the game Wednesday night. Lakers facing at least they catch Denver at the right time. Denver's not playing well. So that makes a game that's in Mile High with an 0-3 team that is struggling mightily. At least gives you a better chance.
Like Mile High?
in the Mile High City, not the stadium.
Oh, I thought you meant in the stadium. I'm like,
these teams suck right now. They're not moving that to a stadium. It's not some gimmick game. No, in Mile High, the Mile High City.
Okay.
All right, we'll see everybody on Wednesday.